California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed into law Assembly Bill 2183, which gives California farmworker unions the right to organize with a simple check on a card. This leads us to ask, will card check answer the dream of Cesar Chavez?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,329th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Now, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Frankfurt who are streaming the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, 25 years ago, I happened to see what I thought to be the red flags of the United Farm Worker Union fluttering in the parking lot of the Coastal Berry Company in Watsonville, California. Thinking that another UFW labor action was in the works, I pulled into the Coastal Berry parking lot and took out my voice recorder. But when I asked for the UFW rep, my request was met with puzzled looks and nervous grins. Finally, an English speaker emerged from the crowd to say, "These workers are not demonstrating for the right to join the UFW. They're demonstrating because they do not want to be forced to join the UFW." Having been given a little taste, I went for a bigger bite and soon learned that the Coastal Berry Company was not really in the business of growing berries at all. The company was purchased by political operatives with the sole intent of growing the United Farm Workers Union. But in spite of their now owning the company, the efforts of the political operatives failed to grow the union. And during the quarter century since, the United Farm Worker Union has pretty much faded from the public eye. A new group of political operatives has now taken up the crusade of establishing a farm worker union, and they're doing it with a legislation that grants organizing authority with a simple majority assent as denoted on a card or petition. Will card check, as the legislation has come to be known, give union organizers the upper hand in negotiations with farm laborers and those who rely on the laborers? Will card check give farm labor unions the political and economic clout enjoyed by public employee unions? And finally, will card check satisfy the dream of Cesar Chavez? Well, here to help us follow the money, we have Norm Groot, who is the executive director of the Monterey County Farm Bureau. Norm, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Nice to be with you this morning.
So, quick question. What, you know, when people think about Monterey County, they often think of Pebble Beach and whatnot. And those who are not of this area don't know about the incredibly profound agriculture that your farmers, the farmers who you represent, actually conduct here on the Central Coast. Could you give us a little thumbnail of Monterey County agriculture?
Sure. So I think one of the important things to learn about Monterey County is that we've been producing fresh leafy greens, vegetables, berries, and grapes for several decades now. And this has been an evolving situation that has really come to fruition because we've been able to develop our water supplies here and provide that irrigation water for all these crops. So when you start looking at Monterey County, which has the benefit of having the soils, the water, and the climate to grow a lot of these crops almost on a year-round basis now, it's really a strategic and important element of growing food for our dinner tables every night. So when you start thinking about Monterey County, sure, everyone thinks about all the great tourism that we have here on the peninsula and Pebble Beach and Carmel, those areas. But no one really understands or fully takes in the fact that we have a $4.1 billion with a B industry here that produces a lot of the major food crops that end up on everyone's dinner tables. So we've been doing that for multiple decades now, and as I said, it's an evolving process, so every year we see something different. But I think the point being to learn here is that not many of these crops that we produce can be harvested mechanically, and so we do depend on a large number of hands to harvest those crops almost on a continuous basis in that year-round production cycle. So that comes to somewhere between 45,000 and 50,000 people each year in the fields harvesting our crops.
That's a city of people.
It is one in five jobs in Monterey County right now, yes.
That's huge. And $4.1 billion a year industry.
Yeah, to add some perspective on that, we are the fourth largest production county in California, which makes us also the fourth largest production county in the United States. And where production here is somewhat larger than almost 20 other states as a whole. So our strategic production here, which we call intensive agriculture because of the quick turns and the number of crops that we produce each year, is very important to our domestic food supply.
And the world's food supply, when it gets right down to it, because if you go overseas and order a salad, chances are pretty good the salad came from Monterey County.
That's right. We do export to 26 or more countries at this point, yes.
Well, good. Given all of that, and the farmers and growers and ranchers that you represent as the executive director of the Monterey County Farm Bureau, did you take the legislation recently signed by Governor Newsom personally?
Well, I'm not sure I would go as far as saying it's personal. Thank you, Michael, for putting me on the spot there. But, you know, it did greatly disappoint me and some degree anger me that, you know, the attention given to the farm workers is important, yes, but it was little or no attention to the side that really faces the farm employer at this point. And so it was very one-sided and very disappointing that the governor did not listen to one of the largest industrial sectors or economic sectors of California producing food and say, you know, maybe it's time to take a step back and leave things the way they are for now, since we are still recovering from a pandemic and we have wildfires that have influenced a lot of the crops that we produced here in the last two or three years. So it was very disappointing, I think, more in large than being personal.
Well, by personal, I meant that your industry in Monterey County is particularly susceptible to this kind of legislation. If, for example, you're growing corn in the Midwest, you really don't need a lot of employees.
Right. And so from that perspective, yes. And we did do our fair share of lobbying our not only our elected officials from this area here, our two assemblymen and our two senators, but more disappointing is that on a statewide basis, that when you look at all the different crops that are produced, obviously here in Monterey County, we have our preponderance of reliance on labor at this point, simply because we don't have those mechanical options available for harvesting. So, yes, in the sense of that being personal to every farmer here, I would agree with that.
And this relationship between labor and growers goes way back to the days of John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, where the farmers had jobs and were giving them to people who absolutely needed the jobs. And yet there developed this adversarial relationship, you know, helped along, actually, by John Steinbeck's portrayal of how mean the growers were to the laborers. And I know that there was a lot of animosity from growers towards John Steinbeck that lasted for decades. Do you see any of that still in existence, resentment toward John Steinbeck by the growers?
I think we're well past that at this point. We have a new generation of farmers here, particularly our younger farmers who are taking over their family operations, who have a totally different perspective on the way that they have their relationship with their employees. And so, of course, you know, all of our history has those dark spots that we have to look at and examine, and we can learn from those mistakes as long as we don't forget them. And I think that's one of the things that the agricultural community has learned in the last decade or two decades, is that, yeah, we need labor, and unfortunately there's been a labor shortage because of of a number of different variables that are happening in the workforce right now. But the point being is that all the agricultural employers are appreciating their employees much more than they would in the 1930s and 40s when labor was well plentiful and also largely domestic. So now we're at a point where we're relying on imported or immigration laborers at this point, largely in the ag community. And we're not seeing as many of those migrate to the United States to work in our fields, and particularly not the younger ones who think that they deserve better than working in an agricultural field and don't really want to have the physical labor that their parents may have had when they saw what they were doing. So, yes, I think the dynamic has changed considerably. I think the other thing that we need to note here, too, is that the state of California has a lot of workplace restrictions and rules and mandates in place that have developed over the last 4 or 5 decades, and now comes to the point where our workers are largely protected from some of those things that they were striking for in the 1930s and 40s. So that has changed, I think, the dynamic of being able to unionize in California, the farm worker sector, simply because workers don't see the need for it anymore. They're protected by the state laws.
Well, way back in September of the year 2000, I hosted a food chain radio show that I titled St. Caesar. And I had a number of guests on who were holding up Cesar Chavez as being the guiding light of the farm workers' movement. You know, they did portray growers as being exploiters of labor at the time. But Cesar Chavez, as kind and the UFW, have kind of faded away. And I wonder if it isn't because of the professionalization of farm workers, as you discussed in the laws that protect them and whatnot. When I drive by a field where farm workers are working and I see their cars parked in the lots, they look like pretty good cars. They don't look like something the judge drove out from Oklahoma anymore.
Well, and I think that's one of the key points that we need to note here is that, you know, back in the 70s, when 60s and 70s, when Cesar Chavez was really on his campaign to improve farm worker conditions, there was a need for it at that time. The farm worker pay was pretty low, and as well as the conditions that they were forced to live in, and it was much more of a migratory type workforce than what we have now. Here in Monterey County now, we have many people who have been living in this community for multiple decades now who are still working in agriculture, but they've become the steady workforce that we see over and over and over, not a migratory situation where farm employers are in a position to take advantage of them, I guess is the best way to put it. So that has changed considerably, and a lot of the tenets that Cesar Chavez campaigned for have been fulfilled, not only by the employers themselves and the advancements that we're seeing in workplace rules throughout the state, but also because employers are now really cognizant of how to treat their employees and value the fact that, yes, it's skilled labor, and yes, we should pay accordingly. So what you see in some of the sectors of agriculture is that with piece rates and some of the incentive pays, they can make well above the minimum wage, and that's why you see, as you said, some nice cars sitting along the side of the road there when you're driving by ag fields, is because the standard of living has increased considerably. I think what we're seeing is that employers have come to be fully aware that this is a situation where they need to value their employees and make sure that they have not only the pay, but the benefits that go along with the job.
That's good news, then, and we're going to take on that good news. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to touch on the politics of labor, and we will be right back with Norm Groot and you. Do stay tuned.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, like I said, when I opened the show some 25 years ago almost, I had the occasion to stop by Coastal Barrie and cover what I thought was going to be a UFW farm worker labor action. We're going to go on strike. We're going to start a union. But it didn't quite work out that way because the union itself was the company itself was formed to promote the union. It was a company-friendly union organized, I believe, by the Democrat Party at the time. So they got together with some significant donors, and they bought Coastal Barrie, and with the intent of organizing a union. Now, I look at the power that is evident in unions and wonder to what extent political parties see them as a source of energy for their political party. And I look at growers, and there's only, when it gets right down to it, there's only a few growers growing a lot of crops. So does that not put the grower community at a significant disadvantage with respect to the organizing of these unions, Norm?
Well, I think in the general context of where the United Farm Workers have gone in the last two decades and seeing how their membership has diminished to less than 6,000 members at this point, nationwide almost, I think you're seeing that the employees, the farm workers themselves, are not seeing necessarily that there's a need to be in a union anymore, and that most of the workplace issues that were tantamount to what Cesar Chavez and other members of the union were pushing in the 70s and 80s are solved. So when you start looking at that and seeing that most of the elections that have taken place in California for involving the unions have mostly been to decertify the unions, and it's primarily because employees are realizing that, yeah, the union is taking 3% of my paycheck every week for union dues and not really giving me a whole lot more in benefit there, and particularly in a area where we're seeing an economic era of extreme inflation and that every dollar counts. I'm thinking that maybe the major portion of the farm worker community at this point is satisfied in the point that they do have jobs, that they do have well-paying jobs, and they do have a lot of benefits that previously were not offered when Cesar Chavez was going through his organization efforts. So we now have mandated PTO, we have health insurance, we have a number of other offerings that employers are taking on to make themselves competitive to their employees so that the employees stay loyal and that they do appreciate the fact that they have an employer who's looking out for them.
And given the labor shortage that is endemic in just about every industry around, having good workers would be very, very important to somebody who has a crop in the ground and it's going to be ready to be harvested, and you better have somebody to harvest it.
Well, and that's a really important fact, because typically if you look at leafy greens, for example, there's about a 5-day window when you can really harvest leafy greens that they're going to be really prime for the market and retain that freshness when they're in transport, not only on the supermarket shelf. And so if you don't have your crew lined up for those 5 days, obviously you're not going to be able to harvest that crop and sell it. And so it becomes extremely critical to make sure that you're appreciating those employees so that they will show up on the days that are required. And that's why we have this continual harvest plan going on throughout almost the entire year, where we're making sure that those harvest crews have something to do on a weekly basis and that they have fields that they can get into, harvest the product, and move it forward into the marketplace. And so I think we're seeing that the transience of the workforce, so to speak, in the past has now been resolved by some of these, not only the farm employers themselves, but the labor contractors who are also employing a lot of the temporary workers at this point to make sure that, you know, they do have places to work every week and that they will be earning a wage and do not have to worry about where their next field is going to be, so to speak.
While we were talking about it, would you be so kind as to describe how the labor contractor marketplace works?
Sure. So a labor contractor is, first of all, licensed by the state, and there are a number of different requirements that they have to meet there. And they're primarily in the business of acquiring temporary worker or foreign workers for a certain period of time, typically a full 11-month season here in Monterey County, to provide labor for various different farms, and particularly smaller farms that may not have the opportunity to go through the process of securing these temporary workers themselves. So it streamlines the process. There are a lot of federal requirements as far as transportation, housing, pay, benefits, everything that goes along with that, so that these temporary workers are not taken advantage of, and they can productively add to the workforce and make it a lot easier for particularly these small farmers that when they need someone to harvest their crops, they can call their contractor and say, I have this field on X day, I have the next field next week, I have a field the following week, and line up that labor so that they have someone in place to harvest their crops. So really, the farm labor contractor is kind of that third, fourth wheel of the vehicle, so to speak, to make sure that we're harvesting our crops.
Well, given that so many of the abuses that John Steinbeck wrote about have been, you know, kind of smoothed out of the system, as it were, over the course of the last few decades, what on earth, then, does a union have to offer a farm worker?
Well, I think the way that they're working through this process now, and this is my opinion, is that they're using a lot of the social justice issues to raise questions in employees' minds that their employer may not be paying attention, particularly to one justice issue or another. It's not necessarily about pay, and it's not necessarily about work hours, and it's certainly not about the benefits that go with those jobs, because those are all there, either required or offered. So really comes down to workplace justice issues, supposedly. And really, that's the rubbing point where the union may insert themselves into one of these particular unionization efforts and create some abrasive situations that really were never there before and causing doubt in their employees' minds when they necessarily don't need to, because the employees are getting very satisfactory work conditions. So it's really a function of what button can they push with the employees, and really it's becoming much more an emotional issue than it is necessarily a dollar issue.
What then are some examples of those social justice issues that would cause a farm laborer to want to join a union?
Well, I think one of the things that we've seen in recent years is the housing crisis that we have not only here in Monterey County, but really up and down all of California, where housing has become extremely expensive and very hard to obtain for someone who is coming into the community or someone who is living in our community who really wants to better themselves and obtain better housing. So they've been using this as one of the charges against employers that they are not providing adequate housing, when now here in Monterey County we've seen four or five and possibly even more housing projects built by the employers themselves to make sure that their employees have safe, reliable, and affordable housing that they can live in. And we have a number of great examples that have won awards across the nation for doing this type of housing for their employees, and it builds loyalty. It allows the employees to maybe transfer to the Imperial Valley or Yuma area during the winter months and know that when they come back to Monterey County to work in the spring, that they have a place to live that's decent and affordable. So I think that's one of the pressure points that the unions no longer can really use as a valid argument anymore, because we have some really great farm worker housing here in Monterey County.
In that respect, farm workers may be better off than most of the rest of the people out here on the streets who do not have any of that kind of housing available to them. And housing is way too expensive for everybody when it gets right down to it. It's interesting to note that the inadequacy of farm worker housing one of the things that John Steinbeck pointed out in Grapes of Wrath, and the terrible state of farm housing and farm worker housing and so on. It's kind of made a complete 180 and heading the other way now.
Well, you know what? That's interesting you bring up Grapes of Wrath, because I just finished rereading that several months ago, and it had been many decades since I had read that book. And I actually was kind of appalled that that historical perspective of not only how they treated the farm workers, but also the housing that they provided, which was not very good, was tolerated. And so there was a need to improve that. And there was a need, I think, for Cesar Chavez to move forward with his union effort at that point in time, because there was a deficit, so to speak, and employers needed to improve their game, so to speak. And between the unionization efforts, as well as the state regulations and laws that came forward related to housing, as well as pay and paid time off and hours of work, those types of things, we really got into an equilibrium point now where farm workers are really on par with all other workers in our community and are no longer that stereotype of being treated poorly, living in ditches or garages and making having to work long, long hours without a break. So all those things have changed. All those things have improved. And I think that's why we're seeing up to this point that there was really no need for extensive unionization in agriculture anymore, because California protects its workers.
Why then did Governor Newsom sign this card check legislation?
Well, I think now we're going to get into the politics of all of this, and certainly,
which is one of your specialties too.
It is, and I love talking about it. So you push my button here. So I think one of the things we need to consider too is first, when this was first drafted, and this was the second year we've been through this process with Assemblyman Stone proposing the card check bill. It was quite interesting to see how there was a perception of the old stereotypes still in place, that farm workers were put upon and that they weren't given decent hours or wages. And that's simply not true. That stereotype is long gone, and we need to dismiss it from our minds.
Isn't that a function of those who live in the city and those who live in the country?
I mean, well, it is to some degree, but it's also a function of our legislators taking those stereotypes and running with them, mm-hmm. with a piece of legislation that does not consider the impacts to the employers. And so when it got to the governor's desk, again, when it first arrived, he said he was not willing to sign it because he had some serious concerns, similar to what he said when he vetoed the same bill last year. And left us all with the impression that, yeah, maybe he might do the right thing because this is really not the answer that we need in California right now. And through political pressure, where you have President Biden and Vice President Harris and a few others in the Democratic Party pushing on him to give farm worker rights to those who need them, it got signed. And so I think he caved in a little bit to the political pressure, and his negotiated promise of coming back this next year for a legislative fix to correct some of the larger egregious issues in the bill itself really doesn't have legs at this point, because no legislator has stepped forward to carry this bill for him next year. So it's almost becoming a third rail in the Assembly and the Senate, mm-hmm. that no one's going to carry this bill, and so we're going to be stuck with the provisions of this bill. And I think the public needs to know it's not just about card check. It's about many other things that are in this bill that impact the employer-employee relationship.
And that's certainly something we want to pick up.
Yes.
But in thinking about the political pressure on Newsom and Biden and all of the Democrats, they're you know, coming into an election here, and I keep looking at that the big power is in the vote, and the vote is in the city. And what do city people know about agriculture, very, very little when it gets right down to it. All they know is that they go to the grocery store and there's food there. And they don't really know where it comes from when it gets right down to it. They think it's something, you know, pretty out in the country that they occasionally see when they go for a drive or something.
Well, and that's really a good point, and I'll take it on as something that we probably in agriculture have failed, is that we haven't really told our story very well to the other 99% of the people who enjoy the products that the 1% produces. But I think it's also kind of has to be laid at the media, too, that they only want stories that really push people's buttons or sell papers, and good stories about what farmers and farm workers are doing together really don't get the press because they don't push those buttons. So I think when we talk about what the urbanite knows about their agriculture and where their food comes from is got a number of different dynamics to it. But first of all, I would lay the blame at agriculture itself for being unwilling to tell the story the way that it really would resonate with those urbanites. So we have to figure that out.
Yeah. And so consequently, in the city, they have streets named after Cesar Chavez, but there's no streets named after Norm Groot yet.
Okay, well, I'm happy to entertain that thought if someone wants to go down that road. I'm not sure anybody would be willing to take that up. But I think, you know, we've had some really strong farm operations here in Monterey County that have done a lot of good, who are very philanthropic in their community organizations and the nonprofits that really benefit not only the whole community, but the farm worker community themselves, too. And I think that's something that's often overlooked, is the fact that we give back as much as we take from the economy. We give back to organizations and other specific items in the community that really benefit everyone on overall and raise that quality of life, so to speak, for everyone concerned.
Good enough. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about card check and just what this is going to mean for agriculture, for people who buy food, and for those who labor in the fields. Right back.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too. Do da doodle da da do 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 do. There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it, it don't cost much, it's so easy it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day, get two others to pledge and play. Do-do-do-do-da-da-da-da-do-do-do, 2x2.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Herbal Connections, Maureen Rogers. I rate MetroFarm very high. All of the information is easy to understand and it reads really fast. You will get your money's worth out of MetroFarm. Egg economist Dr. John Wyson.
Olson's Metro Farms enjoy competitive advantages which allow them to produce more crops per unit of higher quality at less cost than large-scale farms.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning Metro Farm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. We're talking about card check, the notion that if you want to organize a union, all you have to do, essentially, is make a mark on a card that says, I support joining the union. And where does it go from there, Norm Groot?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to look at here is the intent of what Cesar Chavez was really going after when he organized the United Farm Workers, and we got the Agricultural Labor Relations Act here in California, and that was the secret ballot process that allows each individual farm worker of an employer to go in and mark a ballot themselves, either yay or nay, against or for a unionization effort in secret. And that included all employees of that particular employer. What this bill is now changing is that dynamic. It has taken away the secret ballot process. So card check, imagine you get your ballot in the mail, which we all just got this last week for our general election coming up in November, and it's already pre-marked with candidates that are of someone else's choice. That's essentially what card check is. It's pre-marked saying, I'm in favor of unionization, sign here. It does not give the choice to the farm worker, nor does it require all farm workers of a particular employer to sign those cards before it is a valid unionization effort. So really, when you think about it, it's a direct swipe at what Cesar Chavez stood for and the things that he fought for very hard to establish the Agricultural Labor Relations Act.
And he wanted the secret ballots because at the time, the growers were able to bully their farm workers into not unionizing. And so what Cesar Chavez wanted was a secret ballot so that the farm workers could choose for themselves. Today seems to be kind of flipped, whereas instead of the growers bullying the farm workers, it's the union that wants to bully the farm workers. Or am I off base there?
No, I think that's one of the biggest concerns that we've had about this card check process all along, is it's very coercive on the part of the union organizers, that they can go to someone's home, stand at their front door and say, I'm staying here until you sign this card, and then essentially coerce the farm worker into a unionization effort that he or she may not be necessarily wanting at this point. I think the other part of this, too, is it really puts farm employers in a really bad, tough position where they either allow the card check process to take place or they sign up in advance of any unionization effort for what's called a labor peace agreement, which allows, first of all, union efforts to go onto their own property, which the U.S. Supreme Court has said in a decision last year was not to be allowed. And second, allows these situations to move forward without the employer really knowing that this is happening and being unable to make any statements to their employees concerning unionization, either pro or against. And so just imagine that an employer cannot go out and tell his employee, if you vote for unionization, you're going to pay 3% of your paycheck every week to the union. That he cannot say. So it's essentially muzzling free speech on the part of the employer and allowing them to discuss the ramifications of unionization and how that changes the employee-employer relationship going forward. So it's a very tough choice for a lot of the employers, and they're going to have to make a decision in January to decide which way they want to go, risk the card check situation or risk a unionization situation where they can't say anything. They're muzzled.
that the legislation was so one-sided would lead me to wonder, you know, where was agriculture? Was Norm Groot up there with his red flags waving it in the halls of Sacramento saying, hey, wait a minute?
Well, my flags are not red, but yes, we were up there, and my flags were flying rather boldly with not only our elected officials here, who all coincidentally supported this bill, but, you know, I think it comes down to the point that, you know, what we're seeing in Sacramento is a bit of a legislative push to make sure that unions have a place in California, even though California has very strong workplace rules and requirements and employer mandates that they must fulfill. And so this was just another attempt to allow a situation legislatively to take place and put, again, a stereotype on farm workers and farm worker employers to make sure that we're doing this. So, yes, I was in Sacramento. I was pounding the streets as much as I could. We wrote letters to the governor pleading not to sign. It just didn't make a difference, which is really unfortunate because it's now boiling down to the politics of the situation and not really what's good for California's economy.
Looking back to Coastal Barrie, which was really a head-scratcher for me when I pulled into the parking lot and learned that the farm workers did not want a union and they were fighting not to be forced into a union. And I got to wondering, you know, why the Democratic Party of the time would go about essentially having one of their supporters buy a strawberry farm to organize a union. And, you know, if you look at the power of public employee unions today, the teachers' union, my goodness, the prison workers' union, I mean, these people are running the state now. And so there's a tremendous amount of power embodied in a union like that. Is that where the Democrat Party is going?
Well, I think they've demonstrated that over a number of different decades that they've been extremely supportive of unionization. And in many instances, unionization was something that was necessary and needed. But I think we're rapidly getting to a point in our society where unionization is no longer as important. If you look at United Farm or United Auto Workers and some of the other unions that have lost members over the years simply because they have outpriced their labor from the reality of what it takes to produce a car, so to speak. We're changing that dynamic. And so the old hardline democratic theory of holding the union as the way to go for employees is a little dated at this point. And that's not to say that I haven't supported Democratic candidates in the past myself. I do. I vote across party lines. But I think you're seeing a lot of the rhetoric that's coming from Sacramento politicians as well as others across the country supporting unions when really there isn't that dynamic need. And so maybe this is an effort to save something that is already beyond its useful life and that we need to really consider where we're going in the future. And I know that's not going to sit well with some of the teachers and the prison guards and others in California who have very strong unions at this point. But I think we need to really examine what we're doing in society and where we're pricing ourselves out of the production of many things that are now offshore because of the situation that has happened with unionization. So it's a bigger perspective, and it's hard to say that it's just Democrats or Republicans, but I think, you know, it's really become more of a political rhetoric than anything else.
Well, it would seem to me, and I'm certainly no expert at anything, but I just ask questions. And one of the questions I would ask is that it would seem to me that the benefit in the unions, in the farm worker unions, is not for the farm workers, but for the political parties that may find a way of controlling those unions.
Well, I think that's what they've written into this bill, too, is that they are supporting only unions that have filed federal paperwork for the last 2 years, and that is kind of anti-competitive. I mean, if we have a whole bunch of different farm workers who decide that they need something new and different than the current concepts of unions and try to form something like that, that's not valid under this law. They cannot use that union in farm worker situations. So I think it was very anti-competitive when you start looking at it and see that they've extremely limited this to unions such as UFW or Teamsters or those that are already well established and very entrenched in the political rhetoric that's going on around unionization right now.
So if Norm Groot wanted to organize a labor union, forget about it.
I could not do that in agriculture right now, given the law. Correct.
There you go. Well, let me ask you this. Will card check give the farm labor unions the political and economic clout enjoyed by, like, the teachers' union? I mean, if they succeed in pulling this off and sewing it up, will that not give the farm workers an incredible amount of power over the marketplace?
I think we have to all have a crystal ball. Let's look at it this way. And my crystal ball is telling me that because we have not really seen that there's been a whole lot of rush to unionization, which was fully supported before this law, that we're not seeing the need or the necessity to go out and do this further. And so I think there may be a few successes here and there that the UFW and others will be able to point to. But overall, I think, we have a pretty contented agricultural community of farm workers at this point who appreciate what their employers are doing for them and what they provide. And I think it's going to be a hard sell in some cases when the union organizers come knocking on their doors at their own personal time and homes. They're probably going to get a little bit of resistance on that. So my hope is that, it's not going to turn into a wholesale, let's unionize all farm workers across the state or even here in Monterey County, that we can have some sort of balance there and that hopefully the farm workers are smarter than what everyone gives them credit for.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking it probably depends on what they come knocking on the door with.
Absolutely. And if they make a whole bunch of promises that they can't deliver on, that's going to reflect very badly on them also.
One other thing that you brought up earlier, you touched upon it, but it is hugely significant, is the impact of these unions, what impact these unions might have on the growers' ability to compete in a worldwide marketplace.
Yeah, that's a very good point also. We're already seeing that California production is much more expensive than the other 49 states easily, but also around the world. We're seeing production in other parts of the world that is improving their quality and the way they're producing their products also, and they're able in a global market to transport that to our shores fairly easily. So, yes, I think competition is going to be a critical factor there, and we're already seeing that many of the crops that we're producing here are already becoming non-sustainable, so to speak, because of the high cost of production and labor here. So as California continues to pass new laws that afflict employers and change the workplace rules and require more and more non-productive time work, so to speak, that compensation level is going to increase to the point where it isn't sustainable. And we may see some of the farms and the dairies and the ranches say, okay, enough, California, you don't want us, so we're going to go elsewhere, or we're just going to quit and sell our land. So that's a pretty sad state of affairs when we get to that point.
And what impact would that have on the cost of food for those of us who happen to eat food?
Well, it will certainly increase the cost of food. Transportation isn't free anymore, and it's certainly getting more and more expensive as we go along here. But I think you're going to see that the consumer is going to ultimately see the impact in what they can find in the supermarket, as well as the quantity of what's available, too. It may not be that we have peaches 24/7 anymore, that we have to rely on a whole bunch of different resources to make that happen. And if one or more just don't come through, such as California peaches, then that makes a big dent in the market and it causes prices to rise. So it is definitely supply and demand.
And if you look at all of the orchards being torn out of the southern San Joaquin Valley, it's kind of frightening when it gets right down to it.
Yeah, and that's primarily about water. And we have to figure out our water equation in this state, given the fact that we have new paradigms related to climate change and water availability and where we're using those water resources. And I think it's important for everyone to remember that almost 50% of our developed water systems are now devoted to environmental purposes. So that means others have had to do with less, and that's really showing up now in some of the farming situations where you are seeing large fallowing of lands, and primarily because groundwater was now being relied upon rather than surface water flows, which was the original design of the state and federal projects, was to get farmers off dependency of groundwater. So we're now seeing a complete wholesale shift in how we're using water and where the sources are being directed, and we need to figure that out as a state.
The power of city people. We have
absolutely,
the boat, you know.
Absolutely.
So quick, one more question, I guess. Will card check satisfy the dream of Cesar Chavez?
Well, in my perspective, I think this is really kind of taking away that foresight that he had for the secret ballot election. I mean, I don't think anyone who votes in a federal election, a citizen here, would want to have a predetermined ballot presented to them for a signature. And so that's what we're really facing at this point. So card check is really taking away the right of the farm worker to make an independent and secretive decision rather than being forced to sign a card in front of a union organizer. So, yes, I think there is a dramatic shift in the way this is going to happen for farm workers.
And once you take away the secret ballot, then what's left? Not much when it gets right
not
down.
Much.
All right.
Not much.
Thank you, Norm.
Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.